I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Mark and Kitchen.
To me, what's interesting is hearing Belichick and Tom in the presser after say, you know what, we're just going through our normal routine. I just threw it to the open man. What you did was you used this as a preseason game to get AB caught up.
All right, take it easy, buddy. You don't want to do that.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, no, you don't. Off. He's just playing.
No, I ain't playing.
Yes, he is.
Off. No, I'm not.
Yes, he is.
I'm not playing.
Yes,
drop the gun.
He's just my cousin. We're just talking.
AB is a guy that plays outside, but he's capable of being a slot receiver. He's got moves and the kind of things that he put, the quickness of foot that he has.
I disagree.
This is awesome.
Peter, I'm freaking out.
Don't ruin it for me.
On Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, welcome back to the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 FM WEEI. I'm Nick Coy filling in for Mark Dondero. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
That was my best attempt at Mark at starting the show.
Oh, he's a screamer.
He's a screamer.
And it's fast.
And now you've made it so weird, so you don't even know.
It's all energy and pace, and it's fantastic. I'm sitting here like, okay, what are you going to do? So one, obviously. And then he starts yelling at me like, all right, I'm in. Let's go.
Let's go.
Now it's time for Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
All right, welcome into the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI. Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen here in Providence. Ben, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
One quick question. How would Nick Coit like me to start a show? Would he like me to come in all sleepy and, good morning, Ben. How's it going? We're going to talk some
Patriots. Welcome to Mark and Kitchen. Today we're going to talk about Antonio Brown.
That's not what I do, and I'm fired up because here's the thing, okay? And yeah. I don't know if you realize this. So that the Antonio Brown
I'm already ready to go.
The Antonio Brown news dropped that he was being signed by the Patriots, I think hours after we got off the air 2 weeks ago.
Yes. Okay? Do you remember what I was saying about it before, like that Saturday, why I didn't want them to sign him?
Remind me.
It was simply because he's dumb.
Okay.
I was like, I do not, because he's stupid. He's a stupid man. And it proved out.
Oh,
he's a stupid, stupid man.
I was not for it, but the way I justified it was this is the way I made myself feel better about it because the guy's not only is he a stupid man, he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
So I made myself feel better by convincing myself that, you know what, hey, Tom Brady deserves this kind of player. Tom Brady has always, for the most part, had lesser talent, especially at the wide receiver position.
Sure.
You know, he's turned water into wine a lot of times, and that's how he's gotten to different Super Bowls and how he's produced so much because he's made the guys around him, specifically the wide receivers, better. So I convinced myself by saying, hey, this guy sucks. He doesn't deserve to be on the Patriots, and by sucks, I mean as a person. But Brady deserves this kind of talent. So that's how I made myself feel better. So I got on board via that thought. Obviously, it didn't work out. He played in one game. I wasn't on last week to discuss the signing because I was at that wedding.
Yep.
But, you know, now, I mean, let me ask you this. We'll start with this. Our opening takes, obviously, about Antonio Brown.
Yes.
He has now, you've seen it all play out. It was 11 days long. He is now cut. What was your assessment of the Antonio Brown experiment? And now that he is cut, what do you think the team will, how do you think the team will react going forward?
My assessment of the whole thing is, I look good with what I said. Don't sign because he's dumb. And he's dumber than we thought. What an idiot this guy is. I mean, Jesus Christ. You just blew potentially $15 million because you had to send out a group text.
Correct.
You dumbass. What a dummy. I wouldn't want him on the team just because he's dumb. The experiment, it was just weird. It was very weird. I don't think Belichick really cared about the, you know, people were like, well, he's storming off. Now he's looking bad. He doesn't give a damn about that. He does not give a damn about the media. No one knows that more than you. He does not care about that. That's not what did this. It was Kraft finally coming from on high. We can't do this. This is ridiculous. Look at this guy's just a bad guy. He's just a bad guy. We can win without him. We don't need him here. Bill, you got to cut loose.
Dan Shaughnessy had a column in the Boston Globe saying that the Patriots deserve no points for cutting ties with Antonio Brown. And
Well, listen.
Here's the thing.
They don't.
And if you want to phrase it that way, fine. They don't care about that, and neither do I. Because here's what happened. The Patriots, and this is what I believe, and we don't know if this is fact or not. The Patriots signed Antonio Brown before. Remember, when they signed him, all they thought they were getting was the baggage that he had in Oakland and all the stuff that went on there, the feet, the helmet, the inability to get along and get onto the field and all those things. That's what they thought they were getting. Then 2 days or 36 hours after they sign him, we find out about the rape allegations and the civil suit and all of these things. Obviously, that didn't taste good. That didn't feel good if the Patriots knew nothing about that. But they were already in bed with the guy, and they were still willing to, and this is the biggest thing, they were still willing to wait and see how he acted as a member of the Patriots. They gave him a clean slate, okay? Then the text messages get sent, the threatening text messages, and that's just, that happened under the Patriots' watch.
Yep.
Obviously, that was the end of the road. And look, the writing was on the wall when Robert Kraft came out and said, had we known about all this, and I forget when this was, earlier in the week, had we known about all of these allegations, we probably wouldn't have signed him. I mean, if the owner is jumping off board, not a good situation for Antonio Brown.
Well, especially when the owner just had his own little issue with the law down in Florida and a sexual case.
That's correct.
So to speak. He's going to be more sensitive to it.
Especially if it's involving somebody that's not treating women appropriately, because you don't want to be painted with that brush again.
Absolutely. So I'm not all that surprised that they decided to cut bait with him. I'm not. I don't hold them to the fire for sticking by a guy that's going through a civil suit. I don't mind that side of it, even though the allegations were as horrific as they are. It's a civil suit. There's a different situation here, especially as it pertains to professional athletes who have a ton of money.
He's claiming he's being extorted.
Maybe he is. Maybe he is. I don't know. I have no idea. It's possible. But when you see this repeated pattern of behavior from this guy, you go, well, there's something else. Maybe you are being extorted, but it's hard for me to not believe you've done other scumbag type stuff.
Correct.
You almost hit a baby with furniture that you threw off a balcony. To me, that already gives you a sign that you are nuts. You're nuts. There's something very wrong here. And then you start to see more and more stuff comes out about how he treats women. And it's abhorrent. You know, his former stepfather, I believe it was, who helped raise him for like 8 years or something, he was treating women horribly when he was in like high school. This guy, he's been a bad seed since he was 9 years old.
Okay.
Well, and then you just start to see more and more and more, and you take a situation you had within those walls at Foxborough and within this region not that long ago, and you had a guy that you kind of slightly ignored some of the bad signs, and then it turned out horrible for everyone involved.
Yeah. I'm not going to get on the Patriots for taking the chance. I don't think they should have.
But I don't either.
They think that, you know, he's a great player. They got him for nothing. They have the structure and the culture in place to maybe handle that kind of situation. So they brought him on. Okay. And then, you know, they learn some new things. He does something that's, while employed by the Patriots, a big no-no. So they cut him. And I think this is what we all talked about when they signed him. If he does one thing, they'll cut him, and that's that. And it won't bother them. They won't miss a step. They won't miss a beat. And they'll move forward. And that's what happened. So if you don't want to give them credit for that, fine. If you think they should never... Look, this is, I think you could... And I forget if I brought this to this air, if I just mentioned it on the sports post or whatever. You could argue that the Patriots, in a lot of ways, should be lauded for being willing to give guys a second chance. And what I mean is, how many people have fought for a second chance or another chance for Colin Kaepernick? You know, how many, when the Philadelphia Eagles, okay, signed Michael Vick after he went to prison for the dog fighting, they got a phone call from the president lauding their, you know, willingness to give him a second chance. I'm just saying, Not everyone deserves a second chance. When
you brought up the name, so I want to just go down that road for just a brief second.
Okay.
You brought up Colin Kaepernick. When you look at what Colin Kaepernick did and what has essentially kind of gotten him blackballed from the league, and then you look at some of the other guys that got second chances and what they actually did.
Yeah.
It's pretty bleeping disgusting.
It is.
By the NFL and the coaches and the owners, everyone involved. It's absolutely disgusting. Listen, how Colin Kaepernick went about it, I don't agree with. What he was trying to do, I 100% agree with. He wanted equality. That's great. How he went about it didn't make sense to me, how he was doing it. But then the fact that you don't see him again, and I partly believe that's because he doesn't really truly want to play football. He wants a celebrity
platform,
whatever it is. But when you look at some of these other guys and the horrific things they've done, and they've gotten second chances, and this guy can't because he's thought of as a distraction, yet Michael Vick can come back after serving time in jail for what? Oh, killing dogs. Lots and lots of dogs.
Yeah.
You know, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill, all of these guys, Antonio Brown, all these guys. Second chances. What was the name of the defensive lineman for the Panthers, and then the Cowboys ended up signing him? Greg Hardy. Now he's fighting in the UFC. Second chance after second chance. We saw what happened there.
Yeah.
But Colin Kaepernick can't get a second chance?
No, I don't disagree with you there. And if you wanted to spin it...
I just think it's pretty friggin' disgusting by the NFL and by the owners of
the
NFL.
Well, can you help me on the field? They don't think, these owners don't think that what he can produce on the field would equal what he would bring off of it in terms of distractions and all the other stuff.
I get that side of it.
If you wanted to be negative, I just sort of tried to spin the Patriots giving second chances to these guys that have maybe run their course elsewhere. I try to spin that in a positive way. The negative aspect of that would be they don't care about anything else other than winning, and that's not a good thing. Because if you did this, if you treated women poorly, if you were a bad teammate, bad person, bad guy, doesn't matter. Bill will bring you in. And he doesn't care. He just wants to win. That's the negative approach. Now, the Patriots think they have the culture to deal with that. And in terms of Antonio Brown, it seemed like they were dealing with it pretty well. I mean, he was behaving in terms of what he was doing in the locker room. Now, obviously, the text message was a disaster. That was idiotic. All of those things.
So dumb.
But
that's a $5 million text.
I don't think the...
Think about that.
Yeah.
$5 million text.
I don't think the Patriots should feel all that... I mean... I don't think they should feel all that bad. They didn't know about the civil suit. They didn't know about any of the allegations. They cut him as soon as he did something that they deemed crossed the line, and that was that.
Yeah.
And now they go on with their day.
They shouldn't feel all that bad because they signed him before that news dropped.
Correct.
And there was supposedly a confidentiality agreement in place, so you couldn't really talk about it, whatever the situation and scenario, how it played out. But they signed it before it became public knowledge. And then once he actually did something that overstepped the bounds while employed by the Patriots, they cut him loose.
That's it.
So, you know, when you look at it, and you signed a guy that made a complete fool of an entire organization and shot his way out of Oakland, it's a little weird, but I can kind of forgive it and understand it. I'm not worried about the whole Pittsburgh, shooting his way out of Pittsburgh. You were there for a long time. You did what you needed to do. You wanted a different situation. Fine. Do what you need to do to get out of it. I don't care. The Oakland scenario was pretty trashy
pretty
on
bad.
His side. But... I don't mind you taking a chance on a guy that did that to an organization, whatever, played around with it. You know, if you had signed him after those allegations came out, I have a much different feeling about the Patriots and how they went about this.
401-737-1287 is the phone number. In terms of on the field, how does this affect the team?
I think it's actually good for the team not having a guy that you feel like you're going to have to target so many times. The strength of Tom Brady and the offense historically has been, and I know Julian Edelman ends up getting a lot of attention, is the fact that you will throw to whoever's open. You don't have to sit there and laser focus on one guy to make sure he gets his targets. So I think it somewhat helps you offensively a little bit, even though his talent is so great, but it helps everyone else involved and it helps you be a more well-rounded offense. So I think it helps you there on the field.
Now, when we talked about the Patriots going into the season, we talked a lot about the running backs. We talked a lot about some of the receivers. Once guys started to emerge, some of the rookies, Josh Gordon was signed. We talked about him. I didn't talk much about Philip Dorsett, but he's turning into a serious asset on this team.
Yep.
I mean, this guy is a player, and if that's going to be how he plays for the rest of the season, they'll be more than fine. So, the short answer is no. I am not worried about what they're now losing. I know their odds technically in Vegas, they went down a little bit with Brown getting cut in terms of winning the Super Bowl. But I'm not concerned about that. I'm not concerned about their offensive production. Their defense is still elite.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think this really affects them much on the field other than the fact if you were excited to watch two great players try to connect on a weekly basis, Brady and Brown, you're not going to be able to see that.
Yeah. Well, here's the other way it can potentially affect them in a positive on the field. Now, I'm not a capologist. You'd have to follow Miguel's cap.
Yeah,
on
I hate
Twitter.
Talking cap.
He's the best at it, but and I don't know the situation, but it frees up money where you can actually reinvest it into that offensive line, which you desperately need to right now. So that's where it can help you on the field. You freed up money, you freed up space to go get the right guy that's going to keep Tom Brady upright.
Can I ask you something? Every week I look at this damn text machine and all I see is Larry Johnson, who is on the air right now, and somebody talking about his hiccuping.
His what?
Hiccups.
That?
Yeah, what is going on? Can we get some audio of that? I see this every week. The guy's hiccuping on the air. I want to hear it. How is he hit? Like, what does that mean? Every week he's got the hiccups?
Well, you know about Antonio Brown.
I want to hear
it. Sounds like.
I mean, I feel bad for that. I can't imagine doing a show every week with hiccups. Every week I see it on the text line.
Don't ever shake his hand.
Why?
He'll crush your hand.
Okay, big guy?
In a way. He's just one of those guys who crush your hand.
Overly aggressive.
Yes.
Okay. Every week, hiccups. All right. Sorry. Anyway, I wanted to ask you real quick about the team and another aspect of the team.
Yeah.
The offensive line. You mentioned the offensive line.
Yeah.
Is that a concern for you right now? Is that the biggest concern currently on this team? The status of their offensive line and the health of those guys?
Yeah. It should be.
Yeah.
It really should be. I mean, defense? No. No concerns right now.
Not now.
Wide receiving core? No, I'm not all that concerned. Tight end, I'm concerned about. But and if you start to look at the running back situation, Sony Michel, you'd be like, I'm a little concerned. What's going on
with
Sony?
Hasn't played great.
But I'd look at that more as a product of he's a guy that needs a strong offensive line in front of him to really make an impact, just based on the way he runs. So offensive line would be that one, that first area I would need to address if I was running this team, coaching at GM, whatever it is. That's the first area I'm looking at to solidify right now, because defensive side of the ball, you don't need any help right now.
Mm-hmm.
Wide receiving core, no. Running back core, no. Wide tight end, yes. But I'll still take offensive line over tight end.
I'm concerned. Tech Karras to this point has, I mean, he's been good. I haven't really noticed them, which I think is a good thing. We'll see about the tackle situation. They need Marcus Cannon back. And if Isaiah Wynn, I think he's on the IR, so that means what, he can't come back till week 8?
Yeah, IR designated to return week
8. Okay, so that's a blow, because now this guy, who's presumably the left tackle of the future, is an injury guy.
Yep.
You know, he's one of those injury question marks, which isn't good. But if they can get him back, we'll see. Marshall Newhouse, who they project to be the left tackle going forward for the foreseeable future, has been in the league a while. Dante Scarnecchia, we know, is a kingmaker when it comes to that position. So hopefully it's something we continue to not notice. And the schedule during this stretch isn't quite as bad.
It's not that November, early December part of the schedule that's going to hurt.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, the first 2 weeks, man, did you take away anything from last week in Miami? Anything? I mean, that was a place that they usually struggle. Did anything come out of that game for you?
No. Defense. They're so bad.
How many pick six do they have? Three?
Miami's
two.
So bad.
They're so bad.
If Josh Rosen is playing in a game, it's hard for me to take anything out of it because he's so inept.
The last I checked, it was Patriots minus 23 over the Jets. That is an NFL line. That is the NFL line. I mean,
let me ask you, because you bet on sports.
Yeah.
I don't. Are you taking that bet?
Yes, 100%.
Really?
Yes, 100%. It's my lock of the weekend. It would be a major upset if the Patriots don't cover that spread. And that is an insane number. Insane. I have no idea how the Jets cover that. No idea. Who's playing quarterback for them? Who? Luke Falk? I'm not. No way.
I know.
They don't even. CJ Mosley isn't playing. It doesn't look like. There's no way I see them covering that. You know, it's the NFL, so you never know if somebody, a big injury, anything could happen. But if they play that game at full strength, there's no chance I see the Patriots not covering that spread. And that is an insane number. Insane.
And they could get through 3 weeks potentially without giving up a touchdown.
You don't see that in the pros. That's a college line. Minus 23. That's what Clemson would be favored over Wake Forest. That is not a pro line. That is amazing. And not only that, I think the Cowboys are minus 21 over the Dolphins or something like that. Insanity. Okay.
I would take the Patriots over the Jets more than I would take the Cowboys over the Dolphins.
Cowboys, no.
Just because they'll slow it down. That's the other problem is they'll just slow it down and run with Zeke and just kill off the clock and say, let's get out of here as injury-free as possible.
I'll tell you real quick, we got to go to break. We're going to get it trending. The best thing about the Dallas Cowboys, and this goes so much further than football, coaching. You could talk about it with head coaches. You could talk about it in the media. The best thing going for the Dallas Cowboys right now, Kellen Moore. Why? Because they found a young stud offensive mind who has changed the game of Dak Prescott.
Yep.
That is what these teams see. This is why I cringe when there's a head coaching vacancy and the guy goes, you know, the team that's looking for the head coach goes and signs John Fox or some guy, or we need an offensive coordinator. Let's go get Norv Turner, a guy that's been around the block, solid pro. Look, solid pros. But if you want to really excel, you got to find that next guy. The next guy, and that goes for radio hosts, that goes for any profession. You want to find that next talented guy, and the Cowboys seemingly have found him. I think that's a big reason why they're in the conversation for one of the best teams in the league. Dak has taken his game to the next level. Josh McDaniels, once upon a time, was essentially that guy.
Yep.
And that's why, in part, the Patriots have been so successful.
McVay was that guy.
McVay is that guy.
Still is.
Well, he is even more so because he's a head coach.
Yeah.
So you don't always know how they're going to translate from coordinator to head coach, but this guy is a coordinator. I mean, he was a quarterback 2 years ago or something, right?
Yeah.
So to become a good coordinator that fast is noteworthy, and I think that's a big reason why they're having success. Anyway, all right, when we get back, so you asked me something last week when I called in, and I want to ask you something about that. I also want to ask about Eli Manning. We should talk about him getting benched. And I also want Kitch to get to today.
Yeah.
The NFL released their top 100 plays.
Yep.
I want to just go over the top five.
Sure.
I can make a case for a Patriots-related play. I'm sure you know which one I'm talking about. To be the number one play. And I'll tell you why. 0.7 WEI.
We now return to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEI.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, 401-737-1287 is the phone number. Okay, so last week I called in. You wanted to get me all fired up about the Patriots going undefeated.
That's my favorite
undefeated.
Thing to do, to get you mad in one way or another.
I made it clear that I am rooting for them to win every game. I want them to chase the undefeated season. I love it. I want them to do it. And, you know, I think they have the defense. I think this defense is going to be – and I think they're going to end up better defensively this year than in 07. I know they were pretty highly ranked that year. Mm-hmm. But you know what about that year? Who were some of their key guys that were on the team that year? Ty Law was not on the team.
What year are we talking about again?
07.
Sorry, go ahead.
Asante Samuel, that year, was good, but he wasn't as good as Stephon Gilmore is right now.
No.
Rodney Harrison that year was their biggest name safety.
And he was old.
And how old was he? 36, I want to say.
Yep.
Devin McCourty, I want to say, is 32, 31. So about 4 years younger than Harrison was in 07.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy Bruschi that year, who was still one of the centerpieces of that linebacking core, was, I believe, 34 in 07.
34.
And Dante Hightower right now is 29. So, and that's just, you know, a few of the pieces. We know that the Patriots have good linebackers. They've had production at linebacker.
And don't forget, Junior Seau, 38.
Now, I will say the defensive line in 07, in terms of name recognition, was a lot better than it is this year. They had Richard Seymour. They had Vince Wilfork. I think they still had Jarvis Green.
Ty Warren.
So they had some guys on the defensive line that were a lot more decorated than the guys they have now, aside from Michael Bennett. But
And you also still you had Vrabel picking up 12 and a half sacks.
Right. So there's that. But the Patriots defensive line this year has played damn good.
Very good.
So I'm not concerned about them at all. I mean, we'll see down the road. But right now, I'm not concerned about that. So I think overall, when you factor in Jamie Collins and all these other guys they've had playing good linebacker, you know, Kyle Van Noy and Landon Roberts is a captain now. Jawan Bentley's looked promising. And defensive backs, Gilmore and McCourty, That's one of the top safety corner duos in the league. And then you have other guys that have been there for a long time playing together. The continuity.
You mean McCourty and Chung?
McCourty and Chung. I would say McCourty and Gilmore, cornerback safety.
Oh, okay. You said safety duo. I thought you meant
cornerback,
Chung.
Cornerback safety combination.
Got it. Yep.
And then the duo, yes, the duo of Chung and McCourty, they've been together. The two McCourtys have been productive. Obviously, they have a good rapport. So they've been together. J.C. Jackson hasn't played great so far this year.
He's had his moments where he's made some really good plays.
So if he can continue to ascend to that number two level corner, we're talking about something. So you good?
Yes.
Okay. So we were really be in business if that happened, and he's still been all right. So a lot of continuity in that secondary, a lot of talented guys in the secondary, linebackers, talent, continuity, and then, you know, we'll see how the defensive line continues to I don't want to say emerge, but produce, because they've done well so far. That defense looks like it's going to be elite, and we all know about the offense. So where do you stand? You obviously wanted to talk about it. You wanted me to talk about it.
I want you to talk about it because you really love it. You're passionate about it.
Do you not want to talk about it?
No, we can absolutely talk about it. But I want to make clear about this. It doesn't matter to me all that much if you win every single game. If you do it, great. Yeah. I'm thrilled. I'm not looking for you doing it. I'm looking for you to make sure you're in the best position to win the championship at the end.
Sure.
Because that's really what we're going to remember.
Sure.
If you do it, awesome. It's you made up for what happened in 07 and you can finally shut up those stupid 72 Dolphins. Great. But I care more about that Super Bowl. If that gets in the way of you winning a Super Bowl, or even kind of puts a half a roadblock in your way of winning the Super Bowl, then I'm not for it.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter to me at the end. Because here's the reality. We don't really talk about the 72 Dolphins as being one of the greatest teams of all time. We talk about maybe like the 78 Steelers, the 88 49ers.
Sure, the 04 Patriots always gets thrown in there.
No one really is really mentioned, other than Dolphins fans and some of those clowns that played on that Dolphins team.
Yeah.
No one really mentioned, because it's not that important. It's not really that big of a deal. Winning the championship at the end, that seventh title means a hell of a lot more to me than 19-0.
I will say this. The last game of the season, if it came down to the fact that they were 15-0, home against the Dolphins.
Oh, then you're going to do it.
So that would be a lot easier, I think, than at the New York Giants.
Sure.
When you have a team that was headed to the playoffs, you have the whole Boston-New York thing that you would rile up the fans and the organizations, this team would roll over and die.
Well, if you get to December 15th, it's going to be very pretty easy for you. Your last three games, Bengals, Bills, Dolphins.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
especially the Bills and Dolphins at home. When was the last time the Bills won at Gillette? Pre-Belichick Brady? I mean,
I don't
who knows?
Know. It's been a long time.
Yeah, who knows?
You just have to get through that tough run of Browns, Ravens, Eagles, Cowboys, Texans, Chiefs. You just got to get through that run.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you do. I don't care if you're 15-1.
No, I don't ultimately care. I'm not going to be sullen if they lose a game. I'm just saying I want them to try to win every game. And I'm wondering, and you can chime in on this.
Of course I can.
Do you think, this is what I'm going to ask, because I mentioned this last week. I want your opinion.
Yes.
Do you think that in the back of their mind, because these are humans, these aren't robots, human beings, Bill Belichick and or Tom Brady have thought about what being 19-0 would mean for them? Do you think they dream about it? Do you think they fantasize about it privately? Do you think they do?
Tom, no. Bill, yes.
You do.
Bill? Yeah. Because Bill is someone who cares very much about, I think, legacy. He's very interested in breaking records. We've seen him participate in that throughout the years, whether it's the Doug Flutie drop kick.
Yep.
Which isn't really breaking a record. It's just doing something that hasn't been done since the 40s.
It was a historical, noteworthy moment in NFL football.
Having Vinny Testaverde have 20 straight years of throwing a touchdown pass. He likes those things. I think he's very interested in those things.
Great point.
I think Bill looks at that as that last great goal of his. He's done everything else. Tom, I don't know if he cares. I mean, he wants to win every single game, but I don't think he fantasizes about going 19-0. I think he wants to do it, but I don't think it's as important to him. What's most important to him is winning that title at the end. I think Bill would like it a little bit more than Tom would.
I think Bill is, I wouldn't say he's consumed by it, because he's clearly not, because if he was, you wouldn't have cut Antonio Brown. But if I had to hedge between those two, Tom doesn't care all that much, just wants to win every game, but doesn't fantasize about it, whereas Bill does.
I disagree. I think,
you think the opposite?
Nope. I think they both care about it equally, just for different reasons. I think, like you said, Bill Belichick cares about it because of that historical appreciation he has for football, the NFL, and the game in general. That's probably the source of his motivation. And because of legacy and stuff like that, it would mean the same thing for both of them, obviously. Brady, I just think, is more of a killer competitor. He wants to beat everyone's ass. And he wants to crush your throat. I think that's it. There's more Michael Jordan in that regard to Tom Brady. And I think he goes out there every week and wants to crush you.
See, but the difference here is I think that Tom isn't going to look past that guy right in front of him.
No,
he wants to beat
you.
He's thinking about you right now, which is why I don't think he thinks about 19-0. He's focused on making sure he dominates and kicks your ass this week and not thinking about what's happening in 6 weeks. Whereas Bill, and that's the nature of the position that the two of them have. The quarterback doesn't need to have that long thought process of the entirety of the season, whereas the coach has to. So it puts them in a different position to think about things differently. So with Bill, he can look at what's happening in week two and also think about what's going to potentially happen in week eight.
I was watching a special on the Golf Channel a few weeks back on...
God bless you.
It was about... what's the guy's name? Bobby Jones.
The golfer.
Yeah, you've heard of him. He's a famous old golfer.
Famous golfer.
Way back.
30s
way
and 40s.
Back. Yeah, 30s and 40s. And it talked a little bit about how, you know, he had started to have some success. And it got to a point where, during his prime years, he said to somebody before, he's like, you know what? Considering what I've accomplished, I think I could do it. I think I could win all four majors in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could complete the Grand Slam. And he went out there and he did it. And I just think that there is something to that in terms of being on the same wavelength in terms of competitors. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, I think, have had the same thought that Bobby Jones did back in 1930, whatever that year was, he completed the Grand Slam. Where they said, even privately, to no one else.
Yeah.
You know what? I think we could do it. If they look at the team, look at the roster, how Brady's playing, coach is still in place, McDaniel's still around, Scarnecchia, I think we could do 19-0. I think privately, as an elite competitor, they've had that thought. I don't know how you couldn't, Ben. If you've won six Super Bowls and essentially accomplished everything that there is to accomplish in football, and once upon a time you did go 16-0 and you were within minutes of 19-0, how do you just, whatever, no big deal? When you're an elite competitor like Tom Brady is. I mean, these are humans. You would think about these things. I would think about it. If that's the only thing I haven't accomplished and I was that close once upon a time, I don't know how they haven't thought about it. They had to have thought about it. They had to have thought about that.
I definitely think Bill has.
Do you think that had anything? Do you think that thought that you just alluded to, that Bill might have had one day, had anything to do with the Antonio Brown situation, experience, saga?
Sure, yeah. That's partly why I believe Bill thinks about that.
I do, too.
Going out and signing a risk in Antonio Brown when you already have risks at that position that you don't know will be around in 5 weeks, in Josh Gordon.
Right.
But, see, going back to the 19-0 thing, I think, you know, you said that Bobby Jones thing. It's very difficult to kind of compare it over because it's so individually driven.
Sure.
It's all you. You have no one else to worry about.
Yeah.
Whereas Tom, I'm not playing defense.
Yep.
So I have no control over what happens on that side of the ball. I just have to focus on doing my job and doing it the best I can. That's where I get into that split.
Sure. But the quarterback is a very influential position.
He's the most important player on
right.
the team.
So I think it's not out of bounds if that thought did cross his mind. But because we're in a situation right now, and you'll admit this, it will be news. The first team, I mean, forget about losing. I mean, we'll see if the Patriots lose a game. But if a team plays them close for 60 minutes, that's going to be news based on the first 2 weeks and probably based on the first 3 weeks.
Probably based on the first month.
So who's going to play them close?
Because you're going to smack the Jets and you're going to smack the Bills.
I'll tell you this, and I forget if I said this last
week.
And
the Redskins aren't going to play them close. They're garbage.
No, they're garbage. In 2015... The Patriots started 10-0, mm-hmm. but that wasn't this. That wasn't what we're dealing with right now. That team was eking out wins, and they were close games.
And they were trying to figure it out.
And they were figuring it out, which was good. I salute them.
Yep.
10-0, that's great. This is utter dominance. And it wouldn't have been news if they won a close game back in 2015. This year, right now, it will be. The first team that plays them close, we're going to say, oh, you know, they played them close. What did they do that were able to that made them stay in the game, that allowed them to stay in the game? We're going to break all that down.
You know what I didn't realize looking at the schedule earlier until just now? They have their bye week in November, but they have like a half bye week in October.
I have a Thursday night game?
Because they go from Thursday to Monday.
So there's
like
a
half bye week.
That's a half bye week.
That's great for this team. And then they have the actual bye a couple weeks later, 3-4 weeks later, a month later or so. Man, that's actually really good for this team, too.
And then you consider.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it is. And then you consider a team like Baltimore, okay? They have come out guns blazing. They look like they're unstoppable offensively. I saw a segment yesterday.
They're going to fall to earth.
Exactly. And when is that going to happen? Probably around week 9 or whenever the Patriots play them.
October 13th.
I saw a segment yesterday. Feel free to chime in. Is Pat Mahomes and Lamar Jackson the next Brady Manning?
No. I'm sorry. I'll tell you that now. No. The answer's
I can't believe we even had that segment.
No.
After two games against the Dolphins and the Cardinals? We're talking about that? Seriously?
Yeah, no.
He's looked good. He's impressed me.
Who did this?
Was
it on Fox Sports? Was it like Nick Wright and that weird fake hair of his?
Might have been.
That giant nose and that lack of chin?
Yeah. Is that fake hair?
Dude was going bald and all of a sudden he sprouts up.
I don't know where that
came from. Nicely coiffed hair?
Yeah. But that I can't believe that was even a segment. I mean, after two games, Lamar Jackson?
That's epically stupid.
Yeah,
You've had one season of Mahomes. It was an otherworldly season.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But
yeah.
Hey, I saw RG3 have one of the most amazing rookie seasons I've ever seen.
That's right.
And never be anything good ever again.
That's correct. So that was a ridiculous conversation.
Call me in 5 years.
Right.
And say that.
But yeah, I think Bill and Tom have thought about it. It's something that they've never achieved. They've achieved everything else from MVPs to Super Bowl MVPs to Coach of the Year to 16-0 to 6 Super Bowls. Everything else they've achieved. That's the one thing. And now you got a team that is as balanced as any team they've had in a league that you could argue is as porous as any league NFL that they've played in. When you talk about other head coaches and teams,
this is really bad.
It is. There's a lot of bad teams out there.
There are a lot of bad teams.
There's
a lot
good
of bad
ones,
coaches.
Some good ones, but you don't know. I mean, you don't know how these teams are going to be, and you don't know who's going to be. Like that's why I think like the Ravens playing well now is actually a good thing for the Patriots. There's no way they keep this up. There's just no way.
Well, and it also allows the Patriots to appropriately game plan for them and not get caught off guard by a running quarterback, like sometimes can happen to them.
Text, if the Patriots win a Super Bowl, does AB get a ring? I mean, technically, I think Terry Glenn got a ring in 01, didn't he?
Glenn was on the team longer, wasn't he?
He caught that pass from Tom Brady in like week 2, and he was gone basically after that.
Really?
2 weeks, yeah.
Jeez.
But he was on the team for years before that, so maybe that factored
honestly,
in.
Honestly, this is what it depends on, and you might not have any resolution. It depends on what happens over the next couple months. If it turns out that this guy's
a rapist,
or we're seeing more and more pattern of scumbaggery, then they might not. They just might straight up not. I don't know. I guess you do. To me, it's never made sense to give a guy a Super Bowl ring who plays one game
I
with
think
you.
By the book, though, aren't you supposed to get a ring? Don't those guys get rings?
Sure. Maybe that's why
whatever.
He's saying win it for me.
When we get back, I want to touch on the Eli Manning situation, how they benched him, and what's next for the Giants at quarterback.
Terry Glenn played four games. 2001.
Four games in 2001. Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll also talk about the top 100 NFL plays. It's the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
We now return to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Okay, 401-737-1287 is the phone number. Back here on Mark and Kitchen Show, let's talk to Mike in
North
Providence.
We're staying alive, gentlemen. We're staying alive.
Mike in NoPro, good morning.
Hi, guys. Yeah, with regards to, just to make quick points on several things you're talking about. One, Antonio Brown, right? I called you last week. I'm happy about this, first and foremost, simply because it's not merely targeting Brown a lot at the expense of other receivers. It's passing more in general and holding on to the ball longer and getting Tom hit that I was afraid of. And if you're watching the league this year, quarterbacks are dropping like flies, and Tom himself is hurt. Just, and you saw some of the big hits he took against Miami. One, I have nothing to do with that. So just from a purely football perspective, getting back to, you know, 50-50 or close to that run pass is fine by me, because I want to get Tom to the postseason in one piece. With regards to Sony, you know, they were very predictable last year. They ran 75% of the time, and teams came out of the block saying, you know what, we're just going to go and sell out on the run every single time, because, you know, we'll only be wrong 25% of the time. So now, you know, they're starting to kind of mix it up a little bit more, and that's going to help Sony. And then finally with Phillip, the most important thing about Dorsett is the simple fact that he and Tom are so much on the same page that you know, and especially at the price that he costs, that even if Dorsett moved to being like the number four wide receiver, that's still a great thing to have, because he would always be in rhythm with Tom whenever he had to be called upon. And, you know, those 25 consecutive, I think he's at 25 in a row now, that's a huge number as far as consecutive targets completed, because that's not just he didn't drop any of them. It's the fact that, you know, a defensive back didn't, you know, knock one away, or Tom didn't overthrow him or underthrow him or anything like that. Whenever Tom needs to go to Phillip or wants to do it, it's a completion. And that.
Appreciate the call, Mike. I think that number's at 26 to Phillip Dorsett. Look, you know me. We talked about this before the year. I brought it up earlier in the show. I am for the Patriots running the ball.
Yeah.
I'm for them being more of a defensive, running the ball, kind of grinded out, low-scoring kind of team. If they can throw it all over the yard, great. Terrific.
No, to me, it's about being more well-rounded. And it was a good call, Mike. You know, he parts to allude to that, how one area affects the other and helps the other. If you run the ball more, you know, it will keep Tom Brady upright, which is a very good thing. But you need to mix in. That team at the end of the year, shading towards the end of the season, not quite at the very end of the season, was becoming actually very predictable, because they were just throwing.
Yeah.
And they weren't relying on their running game to help them out. And then we saw they did morph into that team that started to have a more running philosophy and using the passing game to kind of supplement that as well, or to help put some pressure on the defense. Sony is a good runner, but he needs an offensive. He's not a guy that can create his own space all that well. You give him a little bit of space, he can get through it and make something happen, but he's not going to create any of his own. He's not going to create his own hole. He's not going to run over anyone. He's not going to avoid anyone. So you need that offensive line for multiple reasons. One, keep Tom Brady up, and two, create holes for these guys. Right now, we've seen Rex Burkhead be the best running back through these two games for the Patriots. But what do we know about Rex Burkhead? You can't rely on him. Mm-hmm. He does not stay healthy. You can't rely on him in week six. You need Sony Michel to get going. You need him to get going downhill to open up more of the offense. It allows for the play action game.
I think one of the things that is obviously missing to this point, it's been two games, is what they did last year in the playoffs was not only establish themselves as a great running team, a team capable of running the ball, but they did it when you knew they were going to run the ball. They still were able to run the ball. That has not appeared yet. I think we all think that it can appear. We're hoping it will. But then when you factor in some of the issues they've had with health on the offensive line and not having seen it yet, that becomes, and Sony Michel's numbers, frankly, it does become a minor concern. I still think we'll see it. Maybe it's more just coach's decision, game plan, any of those things. But I would like to see them get out there and run the ball, even if it's just a quarter. Took a half where they really show they can run the ball, and they wanted to run the ball, and they did run the ball to ice a game, to start a game, whatever. I'd like to see that.
Well, they went to do it last week, and then Sony fumbled the ball.
Yeah.
So, and then they put the pressure on again. That's what they were trying to do, and then Sony dropped the ball, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
So, you know, they want that option. They want to be well rounded there. There's just seemingly not a whole lot of trust, because after he fumbled, we didn't see him again.
No. Well, we'll see.
Burkhead and White was the one that scored the touchdown. So Sony was buried to the sideline.
Well, I want to see them run the ball more and just sort of confirm for me that they could be that team if they want to be that team. And that's still in their arsenal, and they're capable and all those things, especially with David Andrews out for the year. Okay, Eli Manning was benched this week. And Rob Parker, noted Patriot hater, opined on Manning's career, and specifically how Manning relates to Tom Brady and where he gives the edge to Eli Manning. Let's hear Rob Parker.
people say that Eli Manning is a bum, but Tom Brady is the GOAT. Yet Eli beat Brady and the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl. Eli, not anyone else, won the Super Bowl MVP in both games with throws Brady wishes he could make. In a big game, I'd take Eli over Brady any day, and I'll stand by that.
So that let me just say, is a in my opinion, that is a hot take. So for all of you that are confused about what a hot take is, that's a hot take in my opinion. Go ahead.
Can we just get rid of this guy? Like,
I wish I could.
Of Rob Parker? He doesn't draw anything in. His takes are so... Yeah, but we don't tune in. Who cares if we talk? That doesn't matter.
We don't tune in.
That's the only thing that matters. Yeah. And no one's tuning in because he's a buffoon.
Well, maybe somebody else will tune in if we're talking about it. I don't know.
But by your logic, Rob Parker, why isn't Doug Williams in the Hall of Fame? He beat John Elway in the Super Bowl.
John Elway!
Oh, that's because that's not how football works. Quarterbacks don't play against quarterbacks, they play against defense. So you can't really gauge on that. That's dumb analysis. Really, really painfully dumb analysis. If anyone gives it to you outside of Rob Parker, they're a dumbass too. It's really, really stupid and lazy. Really dumb. He should not have won the Super Bowl MVP in the first one. The defensive line should have split that MVP because they're the reason they won that game. He was very good in the second one. He was good in that entire run in that second Super Bowl in 2011.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about big games. But he's talking specifically about the Super Bowls.
Eli Manning has been at best average in the regular season. At best.
At best.
At best. And he does not have the excuse of saying, well, I had most of my career with a bad coach. Dude, you had Tom Coughlin, who's a pretty good coach, probably going to end up being a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah.
Tom Coughlin's the reason that the Giants won those two Super Bowls, not Eli Manning. Okay? His career, look at the numbers. Garbage. Absolutely good. 116 and 116.
Led the league in interceptions.
You're a Hall of Famer, and you don't even have a winning record?
Led the league in interceptions.
Three times.
Is that what his record is?
Yeah, 116 and 116.
His overall record.
116 and 116. And that's including the 0-2 start to this year. He is 116 and 116. He threw 362 touchdown passes, pretty good. 241 interceptions in the era. Now, don't compare him to like Terry Bradshaw. When you look at that era, every quarterback had a lot of interceptions because of the way you could mug the wide receivers. In this era, where you can't touch them and they're free, essentially, and you're throwing that many interceptions year in and year out, you're not good.
Yeah.
Eli Manning was not a very good football player. And if you guys want to keep pissing down the throat of the Hall of Fame, keep doing it, because we are less and less interested every single year because you clowns keep putting in people that we know aren't Hall of Famers. Why do people watch less and less of the Hall of Fame ceremonies every year? Because it means less and less. Why? Because you guys keep putting in clowns that don't deserve it. Guys that might have been decent players, but all of a sudden they're Hall of Famers?
If I could just counter Rob Parker's point real quick, you sort of did that. Number one, he talked about two throws that Eli Manning made that Tom Brady wishes he could have made.
One was not a good throw.
What was the throw he was referring to in the first Patriots-Giants Super Bowl?
David Tyree, helmet catch.
I looked at that play this morning, okay? There was nothing great about that throw. It was a prayer.
No, it wasn't a good throw.
Can you throw the ball 35 yards or 40 yards, Tom Brady? Because that's all that Eli Manning did. It was a prayer.
He threw a 50-50 ball.
50-50 ball.
That Rodney Harrison just happened to have bad positioning on.
So that's that. That was that first one. He made the throw, and the guy made the unbelievable catch and whatever. The second Brady-Manning matchup in the Super Bowl, okay? Eli Manning beat the Patriots barely. And what was the Patriots' defense that year?
Garbage.
What were they ranked that year? That defense was awful. That defense was terrible. That defense, Ben, had no business being in the Super Bowl. Sterling Moore had no business playing in the Super Bowl. The best player on that defense, I know McCourty was there, but he wasn't what he was. The best player on that defense was Vince Wilfork, the defensive tackle. He was the best player on that defense. And Manning still barely, I'll give him credit, but he barely beat that. He didn't shred that defense. That defense was bad.
I'll give him that throw to Manningham.
It was
one of the greatest throws I've ever seen.
Sure was.
In terms of fitting it right in the right spot. It was amazing.
But you said yourself, they play the quarterbacks play against the defenses,
yes.
And he did not shred that defense. The reason the Patriots lost that Super Bowl, both of them, was because of the defensive line. And Manning made plays. He did make plays. But the defensive line of the Giants is what won that Super Bowl. They are the stars of those Super Bowls.
Absolutely.
What they were able to do to Brady and those offenses was the noteworthy event that happened. And Manning did his part more than admirably when it mattered. He made that throw. He got some luck. He didn't, you know, just wilt and curl up into a ball. But don't tell me that in big games, Eli Manning carried the day and was this magician in terms of first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, and out-dueled Tom Brady till the end. Because if that was the case, it would have been more efforts along the lines of when Brady lost the Super Bowl to the Eagles, where it was 300, or what was it, 500 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. I mean, that was a better game than any game Eli Manning played in those Super Bowls.
When you look at his playoff record, it's 8-4. Because you had those two runs where you're coming from the wild card.
Yeah, two flashes in the pan.
Other than those two seasons, winless in the postseason.
Yeah.
0-4. Every other time he's been to the playoffs, one and done. I'll give him that credit for winning those two Super Bowls.
Amazing runs.
Especially in the second one. He was really good that whole time.
I mean, they went on the road. They beat San Francisco and Harbaugh at the height of their powers. They beat Aaron Rodgers. I mean, unbelievable runs.
9 touchdowns, 1 interception in that entire 4-game run. 65%. Pass completion percentage, which is a big deal to me. He was really, really good. But that doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. Jim Plunkett won 2 Super Bowls, 80 and 83 with the Raiders.
Yeah.
One of them, he won the MVP. I don't know if he won. Yes, he won MVP in one of them, and I believe Marcus Allen won the MVP in the other one. Doesn't make him a Hall of Famer. You had a good run twice. That's nice. But the entire rest of your career was average to bad.
116 and
116
is
you couldn't
is
even
stunning.
Get your team to the playoffs that often.
So for you, he's not a Hall of Famer.
He's not even close to a Hall of Famer to me. Yes, you had a good game in the Super Bowl. That's awesome. You're not the sole reason you got there.
I hope he plays one
more
game.
And you're not the sole reason you won, particularly the first one.
Yeah, I hope he plays one more game and loses. And then
so
you he
can say be 116 and 117?
He has a losing record as a quarterback. And he's going into the Hall of Fame. I don't know how you get around that. A losing record. I know that, and again, all the things going for him. He played in New York. He beat Brady and Belichick twice. He's a Manning. All those things go for him or on his side in terms of getting into the Hall of Fame. But that record, I mean, and here's the other thing. Well, we'll get back to that after the break.
Is Matthew Stafford a Hall of Famer?
No.
If Matthew Stafford had 2 Super Bowl rings, would he be a Hall of Famer? Probably, right, based off of this?
We got to get back to this after the break because I want to make another point that involves the Patriots.
Sure.
When we come back, we'll finish up this thought. We're going to get to that top 100 list. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.